Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth drama. Smooth drama.
All right. Welcome to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Hutter. Tonight, we got my main man, Jamil Hip Hill, editor-in-chief of National Press Comics. Also, it's a special end-of-the-year show, so we added a little extra time to it. So instead of getting to hear me run my mouth for an hour, you get a whole hour and a half of Dick. So it's like, ladies, 30 extra minutes of Dick. What else can you ask for, right? Anyway, if you want to give us a call, number 616-929-2037. Once again, the call number is 616-929-2037. And I know some of y'all are too shy. And as always, I want to hear from you. Yeah, I know you're too shy to call. You can always email me your questions and comments, dick@smoothdrama.com. Once again, dick@smoothdrama.com. Email me. I'll read your question or your comments. Or if you just happen to be listening to us live on a Blog Talk, you can jump into the chat room and I'll read your comment or question in there, as well as if you one of those lucky people who are lucky enough to be watching me on live stream, my face that's made for radio. You check me out on livestream.com, Smooth Drama. Yeah, just in case. You want to check me out, Smooth Drama TV. You see me in all my radio magnificence. So, whatever the hell it is, I don't know. Speaking of magnificence, I really don't care too much about celebrities. So, first time it came out, I'm like, yeah, whatever. It's celebrities. Fake celebrities, whatever you want to call it, people who are in the news or want to be in the news, you know, the whole Raz B, B2K, and y'all know the whole I got molested and all this other stuff. I try to stay away from stuff like that because, you know, those kind of allegations are rather severe, and we don't know who's telling the truth, so it's never a good thing for me to think on besmirching someone's good name until it's been proven besmirchable, if that's a word. Anyway, Chris Brown and Raz B got into it on Twitter, and the funny thing about it is the ignorance that these individuals show. They don't understand the power. I know what people do for celebrity, whatnot. I guess it's cool to them because to some people, whatever publicity they get is good publicity, I guess. But for these fools, going back and forth on Twitter, Raz B starts off talking about his love for Rihanna and how Chris Brown is a bad guy, him and Eric Benet for dogging Rihanna and Halle Berry. And so Chris Brown, of course, comes back and he calls him dick in the booty ass little boy. Which is funny. And then, of course, they go back and, well, you're gay and you have a gay boyfriend also. Like, okay. Then it gets worse because that kind of stuff I don't care nothing about. It's like, whatever. You know, Twitter and Facebook posts and all that other stuff, it is what it is. But then Razzby's brother, Ricky Romance, whoever the hell he is, he makes a video talking about how when he sees Chris Brown, he's going to put his gun in his mouth. He's going to slap him around, blah, blah, blah. You know, the usual gangster rigmarole. So he's like, you come to L.A., I'm going to get you. You know, you need to be quiet, whatever. Which leads me to my point. These dudes wanting to have their name out there. I mean, in one, the whole Ricky Romance thing. So it's like, anything happens to Chris Brown now when he's in L.A., you do know they're going to come for you, right? There's some retardation there that I don't understand. And I guess maybe, you know, these people who want to be indicted, they want to go to jail, whatever. Ricky Romance being one of them, internationally threatening someone. You come to my town, I'm going to get you. So anything happens, they're coming to you, stupid. And, yeah, I know. I don't understand it because I guess it's a generational thing, I guess, that it's cool to go to jail in this generation. You know, everybody wants that opportunity to get incarcerated for some strange reason. So I guess Ricky Romance, Chris Brown comes to L.A., I guess you show up where he is and you can go ahead and get yourself arrested and you can sell whatever the hell you're trying to sell. One, you got me talking about it, and I personally hate all this shit. I think all that shit's ignorant and will remain ignorant in my eyes. But I guess it's the only way that you can get my attention anyway, right? Because I wouldn't have paid attention to nothing you said anyway. And still am not. I just think you're stupid. Hey, I just think what you did was stupid. And I think anybody who does that type of thing, when you go all out like, you know, it's not just, there'd be some people who say, oh, well, you make black folks look bad, whatever. No, he don't make me look bad. That's all on him. He's doing that to himself. I have nothing to do with it. And that's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Although it'd probably be a little bit better than the story that old Tucker Carlson, not that a lot of people know who Tucker Carlson is. Tucker Carlson is a guy who does hosting on Fox News. And he's a conservative. Shock, shock. Yeah. Anyway, he's a conservative, and he guest hosts Sean Hannity's show, if you know who that is. You know, one of them guys. Another one of those guys on Fox News that I don't watch. And I try not to watch because I like to keep my mind free of ignorance. Even though every now and again, I can't lie, I have peeked them out because sometimes I need a laugh because I think that there are a lot of people who follow them dudes and they think that shit that they say is like cool and real and it makes sense. Anyway, this is a dude. He comes out, everybody knows about the whole Michael Vick and the dog thing. He came out and said that Michael Vick should have been executed for his role in the dogfighting ring. Yeah. Just really, really stupid. But in a way, you kind of expect that coming from people like that. So it's not really shocking. It's just the fact that he's like, okay, the prison time that he did was not enough. He should have been executed. You get the death penalty for that. Just wonder about these people. Just wonder about them. Not more than I do. Somebody that I just reported on earlier this week, the Haley Barber. Governor Haley Barber. For those of you who don't know, Haley Barber is a presidential hopeful for 2012 out of that very touristy state of Mississippi that everybody's flocking to go to. He had ran into some issues because he had made a comment talking about the civil rights during the civil rights movement. He didn't remember it being that bad, which, of course, I defended him because, as I stated, it probably wasn't that bad to him. Nobody was after him trying to hold him down or, you know, throw rocks at him or have dogs chase after him. So he was correcting that assumption. He also had made the statement to an aide, saying that if the aide persisted in making racist remarks, he would be reincarnated as a watermelon and placed at the mercy of blacks, which is, I guess it's funny if you think that kind of thing is funny. I don't think it's funny. But I don't really care about Haley Barber either way. So this is in the backdrop. Haley Barber puts himself back into the public eye by he pardons two sisters who were serving life in prison for an armed robbery that had got them $11. Gladys and Jamie Scott. They're going to be released, and the reason why they're going to be released is because Jamie requires dialysis and needs a kidney transplant. So upon condition of their release, Gladys has to donate her kidney to her sister Jamie. So I guess this is showing his presidential compassion. So he runs for 2012. He can say, hey, look, you know, what I said was misconstrued. I didn't mean it that way. And look what I did. I commuted the sentence of two young women who civil rights activists had been saying were wrongly accused and shouldn't have been in jail for life for $11 robbery. And I got to save the lives at the same time because one was going to die, see? So that's Haley Barber redeeming himself in the public eye. Now he too joined that long line of politicians who are real champions of the people, right? Oh man, that's just funny. I'm trying to rationalize it, or to, I guess, somewhat make it make sense. a little bit. Just a tad bit, maybe. Y'all don't see Haley Barbour out of Mississippi? Presidential? Looking presidential? Maybe? No? Just saying. Anyway, I'll move on to something happier. Well, not happier, depending on who you are. It's now legal to go ahead on and hunt pigs. So, all you people out there who want to shoot pigs, go get them pigs. Let them know who the boss is. Get your shotguns ready. You shoot all the pigs you want. You just have to go over to France to do it. I know. Like, yeah, you talking about killing the cops. No, I guess over in France, they have a dramatic rise in wild boar. And so, sort of like what happened in Florida when they had that proliferation of pythons down there, and they open it up where people can hunt pythons. They were encouraging people to go and shoot and kill pythons in Florida. They're encouraging people in France, French hunters, to shoot as many wild boar as possible because I guess there's been proliferation. They're just all over the place, and they're starting to grow in population where it can't be controlled. So they need to control them because they're starting to run in wild packs and causing accidents and all this other stuff in France. I look at it as it's an opportunity to rehabilitate. Maybe what we can do is, as we do the foreign exchange program, maybe we can send some Crips and some Bloods, different groups, whatnot, and have them go there to hunt boars as opposed to shooting each other. They're going to be out there shooting, have opportunity to go ahead on and shoot against, like wild animals, like real wild animals. And hopefully it'll clear their aim so they can shoot what they're really trying to shoot as opposed to shooting all the innocent folks that they shoot, kill, and maim on the regular. I know. I'm just saying, I think it'd be a benefit here if we want to do some foreign exchange. Send over some Crips and Bloods. Separate them. Let them go out separately, whatnot, but they can hunt boars. Change their anger. Point it towards something else. Point them toward the boars instead of at each other. Just a solution. You can take it or leave it. I don't know. It makes sense to me. I don't know about anybody else. Anyway, on that note, we're going to take our first break. We're going to go into one of my favorite songs, one of my favorite new songs that's out now. This is The Heat by Twista featuring Raekwon.
No ID, legendary tracks and production. Twister, I'm I'm a giant, it's an astrological science. Rap a phenomenal violence, I'm such an honorable tyrant. Verbal telekinesis, it's cutting fellas to pieces. Hell of a thesis, but holy, like you can tell us from Jesus. As good as pelican briefings, with the force of a sorcerer. Never forking the pork, I'm orchestrating the orchestra. Forfeit your formula, cause I'm forming a thesaurus, a versus, or a chorus. Some more when I smoke a forest. Superpowers like Morpheus, Orpheus like the Oracle. Portable MP3 players let you play what's recordable. Legendary like Hyster, not scared to bury your rapper. I'm up for the beat, just a vegetarian actor. Identification is gon' have to go by me, cause long as I got no ID, victims ain't got no IV. Intravenously poetry, pedia light, I'ma give them. They said it was hot, so check the media high.
If I was a rapper, that's kind of how that I would rap. You know, I would just like flow. But because I rap so good, I didn't want to, you know, hurt other rappers' feelings. So I decided not to because I ain't want to mess the game up. Y'all believe that, right? Right about now, we're about to get my main man, Jamil, on the phone.
What's going on?
I'm all right, man. How you doing?
I'm chilling, man. I got me and LaDon Mason right here with me, fellow artist and fellow hater for the Hate the World podcast.
I hate the world too, man, so we going to hate together tonight.
Excellent.
All right. So what's going on with you, man? I haven't seen you in a minute. What's been going on since I last saw you?
Well, you know, been hanging out, been chilling, been in the lab, making some great new comics. Hopefully we'll be able to share them with the world next year. We've got three new titles from our company, NPC Comics, for next year.
All right. Well, talk to me about what you got coming up. What's the new title?
Well, the first one is made by myself, co-written with Mark Shapiro, who works for the Sci-Fi channel, S-Y-F-I, Sci-Fi as it is now. It used to be Sci-Fi. I don't know what it is now.
Yeah.
But he and I co-wrote a book called Sun Lar, and it is about a guy who gets powers from an alien. So this might sound familiar to a lot of people who are Green Lantern fans. An alien comes down and crashes and has to give his power up. Well, you see, instead of a test pilot, a brave and noble U.S. Air Forcer, he crash lands in East L.A. and a drunken fry cook throwing out the night slop gets the immeasurable power.
Mm.
So what happens when a complete jerk-off gets the power to control the universe? That's what we're going to find out in Sun Lar.
That doesn't sound good.
Well, you know, you never know. You know, he could be a hero, he could be a jerk, you know. And sometimes, even though you could be a bad person, you could do some good things. So we'll hope he errs towards that. We'll find out.
All right.
It's scheduled to go for 3 issues. It'll be available at WonderCon, so come check it out. The artist on it, Jeremiah Perkins, is a first-timer, so this will be his first published work, so I'm sure he's going to be excited to share it with everyone. So we're going to have some fun with it. It's definitely not a run-of-the-mill NPC comic, so we'll see what happens.
Well, no, I mean, you don't make the run-of-the-mill comic. I mean, I was impressed because, you know, I had actually bought your Stark. And yeah. and it harkened me back to the old days. It had the old old Marvel comic. I'm gonna say it, but it's like Gene Colan, Tomb of Dracula type feel to it, you know. So I saw that, and it took me back to when I was like 12. You know, so I anxiously await the next one.
Well, you know, you got the creator right here. Of Stark.
Oh,
yes. Yeah, LaDon is here. He's got a new book coming out next year. Unfortunately, it's not Stark. So I think Stark fans are going to have to wait for a little bit, right?
Well, Stark has been kind of pushed back a little.
Okay.
It's still a work in progress. It's still coming out with stuff. Just getting it all in order. Right now I got this new book coming out called Baseless, which is about a guy who was a very gifted athlete who finds out that his athletic ability is really more of like a superpowered gift. But he doesn't become a superhero because he's no good at it.
Okay.
Interesting. Yes.
So basically he's the ladies man with superpowers.
I mean, yeah, but I mean he actually is kind of down and out. I think I think if people are fans of that cable show, Eastbound and Down?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
Imagine that guy with a superpower. You know, he's kind of like an out-of-work baseball player. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's got these powers, but they're not really useful. I mean, they're great when you're playing baseball, but you're not going to stop crime with them, you know.
Yeah.
Unless you chase people around with a bat.
Yeah, pretty much.
That would make him Batman, right?
I guess so.
Yes, yeah. You used to call him Crazy Joe. But
now they can call him Batman. Maybe he could become a principal. Maybe he'd have, you know, a coach.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I am the head in charge.
Yes. Yes. The HBIC.
Yeah. All right. Let's get into Ultimate Press Comics, man. When did you start this, and why did you start it?
Well, you know, it's a long story, and people can go to our janky website and kind of see the condensed version. But it started back in high school. LaDon and I have known each other for going on, almost 20 years that we've known each other. And it started with a couple of us and a couple of our friends. And really, literally one day I was reading, and I'm going to call it out, I was reading Youngblood, all right? I was reading Youngblood number 3. And after I had seen, like, the fourth or fifth panel that Rob Liefeld had stole from an old Fantastic Four comic, I told myself, not to hate on Rob Liefeld, but that if he could do it, I could do it.
Well, you ain't hating. That he does.
Yeah.
Go to pass.
It's just one of those things, you know, where you just have this epiphany. It was literally an epiphany. So I said, you know, I could do this. I've read these comics since I was 7. I think I can make one. If he taught himself, why can't I do it? So, and as I got older, as we got out of high school, you know, I ended up going to art school at the Academy of Art in San Francisco. It became more of a mission, and we kind of defined ourselves in our late teens where we wanted to be a more diverse group of creators and make diverse characters. Because it got real clear to me when I graduated high school and started the art school in the summer. And they offered a comic book class that summer in 1995 when I graduated high school. And I went in there, and I was the only black kid in the class. And we're talking 50 kids.
Been there, done that.
You know, and I was a raisin in milk, man. You know? And I realized, I was like, man. And sometimes, when you're young, you don't really think about it, but as me becoming an adult, you start to think about stuff like that, and you just notice, you know. You go to the conventions, and you're looking for black artists or whatnot, and you can't find them.
Yeah.
Black writers. It's very hard. You know, Milestone had been canceled by then, so it was very hard to find people like me creating stuff. And, you know, you start to notice that, wow, there's not that many Asian folks, too, either. I mean, I found Ron Lim and Jim Lee, and that was about it.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce Portacio, it was very, very few people. You know, and so you look around and you're like, wow, nobody really looks like me. There's no minorities. There's not a lot of women, you know. I got sick of seeing Bobby Chase everywhere I went. You know, it's just, you know, one woman. So we decided to become more diverse. And so our company is dedicated to bringing diversity, and not only in front of the camera but behind it. We want to be diverse creators and have diverse creations.
Right there?
Yeah,
a little something there.
All right.
So, did you want to break in?
No, all right. Yeah,
don't let me start.
All right. You did, no, all right.
I got to ask you this. Now, you was having a conversation at the Isotope.
Yeah.
I saw a commercial, and I wondered if you saw it. You saw the commercial for the cake.
Oh, Lord, yes, I did.
Yeah. Do you remember that conversation we were having that night where you went off? Oh, and it's talking about nothing can happen unless there's a cake. You're going to see it. Something is going to happen with a cake. You kept saying it. As soon as I saw it, I laughed for like 10, 15 minutes straight. Like,
that's true, man. If you want to have a comic book in America, and you want it to be successful, somewhere along the line, there has to be a cake. You know, that may not be true in Japan. It may not be true in, you know, Europe or even South America. But in America, we want our heroes with capes, or at least our comics with capes, excuse me.
Yeah.
You know, you want your comics with capes. Now, you know, I personally, I think the cape is going to flop, but I think the best thing we've seen in terms of comic book superhero stories on TV in the past, like, 4 or 5 years, it's probably No Ordinary Family.
Yes, I was just about to ask you about that. I've been watching that, and what did you think of that, as well as some of the there's a few other shows that they're talking
right
about doing?
I think that every Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever No Ordinary Family comes on, I think Tim Crane watches that and cries. Because basically, that's what heroes should have been.
Yeah.
And he don't he realizes, like, man, I crunked up, you know. Tim Crean should be forced to watch No Ordinary Family. I mean, like Clockwork Orange style. He should be in a room with his eyes peeled open, watching that. Like, this is how you screwed up.
Right.
He was talking about ordinary people with extraordinary abilities, and it became, he just started ripping off X-Men.
Yeah. Right.
This is really ordinary people with powers. They're still going about their lives, and the powers play a role, but it's more of a drama. And that's really good writing. I think it's a lot farther to go. I think it really hurts Marvel because, once again, they're never going to be able to make a Fantastic Four movie because they just got beat to it, you know? Like, you can't make a Fantastic Four show now. You can't.
Yeah, it's the same actor, too.
Yeah, it'd be yeah, they even took his thing. Yeah. They even took the thing from Fantastic Four and made him the head of this family and did it better. So,
well, yeah, true. But I also think what hurt them is early on the terrible Marvel comic shows. We had the Incredible Hulk. That to me, that was one of the worst shows that I ever seen.
Well, that show was fantastic.
Oh, come on.
You stepped on Bruce Banner. Yeah, David Banner.
Yeah, right. David Banner. Bruce was too gay.
You know that son? He turned on Lou Ferrigno.
Yeah.
That's exactly what the Hulk should be.
The only thing I want to see is, like, I don't know why no one ever snuck up on the Hulk. Because, well, technically, if Lou Ferrigno was the Hulk was deaf. So, I mean, what you should have probably done, instead of running from him, hide and then sneak up behind him and hit him because he couldn't hit him.
Oh, wow.
That's probably what you should have done.
Yeah, we hope to God that Lou Ferrigno never hears this show.
He's going to kill me. To me, I heard what you said.
And he goes to the Comic-Con, too, so he like, that's him.
Lou's going to rip my head off when he sees me. I was nice to your nephew. How are you going to talk about me like that? But, yeah, I think that's one of those things where these comic companies need to kind of step up because other people are doing their ideas better than them.
Yeah.
You know, the best Fantastic Four movie ever was The Incredibles.
Yes.
That was Fantastic Four.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, that they can never do a Fantastic Four movie now because The Incredibles did it better.
Well, you know, not to mention they actually did the actual kids. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Speedball.
Yeah.
They like the X-Men movie. They just screwed it up.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of the thing. It's the either or, because sometimes they make these movies and for the sake of getting it out there to sell toys, they put characters in.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Spider-Man 3.
Mm.
Spider-Man 3 was ruined because they needed to sell Venom toys.
Right.
You know, and they didn't want to have to come up with different toys to sell more Spider-Man action figures, you know, because you already had two movies. So any Spider-Man action figure you could think of, they'd already made. So what they had to do was bring in Venom, so now Spider-Man's wearing a black suit. So you can remake all the toys you already made, you just paint them.
Yeah.
You know, so they just painted them, and now the kids, that's a different toy.
Yeah, it's so you see an executive sitting around like, we got all these excess Spider-Man toys.
Exactly, what do we do? Paint them black! Paint them black! Genius. That guy's a genius. I'm going to give myself a $2 million bonus.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's what happens. You know, the executives get involved in it. You know, I mean, but Spider-Man 3 was going to be booty anyway. I mean, because they stuck Venom in it, and then they made Raimi allow the scriptwriter to make Sandman change Spider-Man's origin, which ruined the Sandman character.
Yeah.
You know, so
I mean,
that movie was doomed anyway. But X-Men 3 was bad. I don't think Iron Man 2 was as good as Iron Man 1. You know, once something's successful, everybody wants to get a piece of the pie. So,
well, yeah,
executives come in and start fiddling with the script, and that's cool.
Now, have you seen the cartoons? They're making great cartoons.
Right.
They're cartoons.
I don't think they see, the movies, they're like tentpole productions, and something tells me, now I don't know a lot about the movie business or whatever, but I think that they kind of, they don't pay attention to the cartoons. They're thinking, oh, that's Saturday morning stuff, you know, that'll make us some money, but we're not spending $200 million to make that. You know, it might cost you $200 million to make two seasons of a cartoon, but it's one movie.
Yeah, I mean,
so
but
they get in on that movie money, and they're like, well, we're spending $200 million. It's going to make $500 million. You know, I need to earn my money on this. I need to make sure I'm involved in this thing, so I'm going to put an add-on on it and get my money so I can take a couple points off the back end, you know? So, you know, I think they tend to like to mess with the movies more because they know they're going to make more money. So if you can, it's kind of like Puff Daddy. You ever hear the story about how people would have a song done and Puff Daddy would come in and add a cymbal and then take executive producer credit?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, I think it's the same with these movies. These guys come in, they make one little tweak to the script and they say, I'm an executive producer. So they can take some of that money.
Yeah, I guess. Now I wanted to ask you that. Are you guys thinking of doing any cartoon animations or any movies in the next year or so?
Well, you know, it's a slow process. I mean, we did, for one of our old ideas, we did have a holding deal with an unnamed, I don't know if we're allowed to say who we were with, but I'll tell you later off the air. But we did have a holding deal with the production company. Who is known for felt animals. I'll put it that way. They're known for felt animals, talking felt animals. So they had a holding deal with us, and, you know, those things, like, I learned a lot about how you have to hurry up and wait with those. So we would love to do a cartoon or a movie or a TV show, but I think one of the big things about MPC is that we make comics, but we don't treat them as a genre. We treat them as a medium. Yeah. So just because my character Shadow is a comic book doesn't mean he's necessarily a superhero. I mean, I do have a cape in there because that's mandatory, but it's a detective story. And that's how I wrote it. That's how it's being drawn. That's how we're coloring it. That's how we present it. It is a detective drama. So if anything, it is not Batman. It's NYPD Blue. So, you know, it just happens to have a dude who puts on a mask at night, but it's NYPD Blue, or if I can't, OPD Blue, because it's based in Oakland.
Yeah.
But it's not a superhero drama, so I would have a lot of trouble making that movie or that show because everyone would be like, oh, it's a superhero thing, let's make a Batman knockoff. And I'm like, no, this is NYPD Blue. I probably want to tell it as a miniseries rather than a movie. And so it's very tough. You know, if we could get the right people, you know, I think for the comic that we were doing, like I said, that company that I worked with before, it was a great fit because it was different, and it was for one of our satire books. Well, it would have worked perfectly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to jump in here and say that, I think that you probably, with your NYPD OPD story, you do well nowadays. Shit, there's a cop story on every station. You know, we got like 400 stations.
Yeah.
And I was sitting up there talking about it the other day. It's like, there's a cop show on every station.
Yeah, they love their cop shows.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll see how the cape does, because the cape is kind of, well, it isn't close to what I'm doing, but it is a cop show with a dude in the cape. So we'll see. I think it's going to fail miserably so then I can come in and pick up the pieces. But, yeah, y'all really did that wrong. Why don't you let me help you out? You know, if I could get on an HBO or something to tell the story that I wanted to tell, you know, if anything, I would get even more grittier than anyway. I would go with The Wire. I think that's the best show ever made.
Yeah.
You know, and I would do something with The Wire with a cape or something like that, you know, or one of my, or if Sun Lara was a movie, I don't know if I'd go to sci-fi because they just canceled Stargate Universe, so it's obvious they don't know what science fiction is.
Right.
So I'm not sure. But, you know, I would go to, like, USA or something, you know, a small independent cable company that I only have to pull 1 million people to last on. So, you know, but you have to tell the story you want to tell. So we'd love to do cartoons or shows. That'd be a godsend. That'd be great because then it financially sets you up to make more of the comics that you want to make anyway. But at the same time, I know everybody says this and they don't really hold to it, but I really rather keep the integrity of the stories I'm trying to tell too.
No, I mean, I think that's the important part of the whole storytelling deal. I mean, if the story's not coming off genuine, if you're just doing it because this is something that you think will sell, it ends up being what you were talking about earlier with these movies where they were just doing it just to sell dolls as
opposed to
I stand by my story.
Yeah, well, you know, the homie Abe Scott, another Oakland original artist, he says himself he's got ideas that he made to sell out on. So maybe I didn't do that. Just get one idea that I really don't care about and do whatever you want. You know, just give me the money. Just do whatever. So I think everybody has that one idea. You know, hey, Mark Millar had Kick-Ass, you know. He doesn't really care about that story.
Right.
He's basically making fun of himself. He's the guy who writes all the hyper-violent comics. So he made a comic that made fun of his style.
Yeah.
You know, so and he doesn't care about it. He sold out.
Right.
Put it out. And he's a millionaire, you know. So maybe that's the route we need to go. But
like Ninja Turtles.
Exactly, Ninja Turtles. You know, anybody who reads the Ninja Turtles comics from the early 80s, early mid to late 80s, you wouldn't recognize the pizza-eating guys from the cartoon. So.
Well, I mean, but
April O'Neil.
True, April O'Neil was also black. So she apparently got Michael Jackson syndrome the moment she got on the show.
Yeah.
She got a bit of lie-go.
Yeah.
She got a bit of lie-go when she got on the show. Need to get her on an Oprah interview. April, come on.
Yeah.
You had a fro and three shades darker when you were in the comic. And the moment you get on the cartoon, you got a perm and you're very pale. What's going on here?
It was my makeup. I used this makeup. And
what had happened was...
It was that Sammy Sosa.
Yeah, Sammy, what happened?
Yeah,
he was like that the whole time.
He was mad,
cleaned himself up really, really good.
You know what I think it is? I think after he lost the home run race, he got obsessed with Mark McGwire. I'd be like,
I need to be. If I was white with freckles, I could have got the home run race.
Maybe that is the side effect of steroids on black people.
Using that cream.
Yeah, that's what the cream was. Yeah. The cream was skin bleach.
Yeah, the clear.
It made you clear. Yeah, it made you clear. No, I've been baited. Gary is innocent.
Maybe Gary
is black as night. Yeah. Gary's like, look at Sammy, I didn't use him. I use no steroids. See, look at Sammy.
They said we use the same thing, but look at you.
He's Sammy translucent. I look like an alien. Man. Yeah, exactly. You look like an exhibit at Body World. You can see inside of them and everything.
Yeah, wow.
Like, Sammy, dang. See, what I wanted to do was make my skin see-through so you could see my muscles and know that I didn't take anything.
Do you see it in steroids? Do you see it in steroids?
That's in there, right? Y'all are crazy.
What we do, we also got a podcast. So, yeah, if you keep it out every Friday, you know, we do Jamel and LaDon Hate the World, where we mock people like that. So, you know, now we just getting off with you now, you know. Yeah. So,
you know, I had to come hang with y'all, man.
Yeah.
I had to come hang with y'all. Now, I want to ask you also, now, as far as the making of the comics, whatnot, you know, your title, editor-in-chief, whatnot, tell people what all that entails.
Well, you know, it's funny. The more ground level the company is, you know, the editor-in-chief at Marvel spends his day in meetings. You know, he Joe Quesada, you know, that's why he has time to still draw a cover every once in a while and stuff, you know, because he just provides story direction. Editor-in-chief is kind of like the executive producer. He comes in, he's the chief writer in the company. He makes sure that all the stories line up, you know, Thor, Captain America, the Avengers, they all live in a shared universe. So it's the editor-in-chief's job to not only represent the company as the face of the company, but also internally to make sure all everything jives. So you're kind of like the head writer, you know. On the independent level, the editor-in-chief is often the business owner as well. I'm part owner of MPC. So really, everything from conceptualization to publication is the responsibility of the editor-in-chief. I pair up artists and writers. I decide the artistic tone of the book. I provide, you know, story soundboarding, I guess you could say. If I'm writing the script, you can come to me and go, well, what do you think of this? And I'll try to either give my opinion or steer a different direction or whatever. Then when the comic comes in, I review the letters. I review the coloring. I review the inking, everything at each step. And then I do interviews like these. I go out and publicize, too. So I'm part publicist, part editor, part business owner.
All right. So explain to us what are the benefits of the job.
The benefits of working with writers like me who make this life a living hell.
You know what? Honestly, this is going to sound real cheesy, but come April, when I'm sitting behind that table at WonderCon, come find us in the small press booth right next to H. Scott and Superhood. If you pick up a book and you go, man, this is pretty funny or this is pretty cool, and you give me $3 for it, that's awesome. That's it. That's it. That's worth it. You know, every convention I've been very lucky that there's been a kid, because we really try to gear our comics where anybody can buy them, adults or kids. And every convention there's been at least one kid or something that says, oh, you're cool. And that does it. That does it. I mean, we're not rich, but I got to be honest, as hokey as it sounds, that's a really good feeling when someone looks at all your work and goes, that's cool.
Nah, there's nothing hokey about it at all. I mean, I look at it, you know, when you're in the comic book business and you're doing the art, whatnot, I see it as exhibitioners. When people see your art and they're like, that's cool.
Yeah.
And it makes it worthwhile.
It does. It really does. You know, it's because there's not a lot else that you're going to get. So you kind of have to take it how you're going to get it. You know, and then we've had some profitable conventions and books, and we've had stuff where we've lost our shirts, you know, especially at the beginning. So, you know, sometimes just to have, you know, someone say, hey, you're good, you know, that keep going, and that's all you need. You know, our first convention was in 1998 in Oakland at WonderCon, and we hadn't even finished any comics yet. We just had, like, posters and drawings that we were handing out, literally just giving away our stuff for free.
Right.
Because we just wanted people to know about us. And this one little kid, I mean, he's probably an adult in college by now, but he couldn't have been more than 5. And he had my poster of my character, Shadow. And for some reason, he was enamored. There was no comic for him to read. He just liked the way the character looked. And he asked me questions about him. And I'll never forget, his final word was like, your character kicks ass. And he just walked off. And I was like, that was awesome. And it was the first time anyone heard my idea and said it was cool. And because it was so honest, because, you know, it's a kid.
Right.
You know, he was totally honest. He was like,
kid.
Yeah, well, he was foul mouthed, but his dad was cool. He said, your comic kicks ass. He's learning to say. He's 5 years old, and he was allowed to say it. So, but it was really awesome. I mean, he doesn't remember that poster. He's probably been thrown away by now.
Right.
He's in college or something. But just the fact that he was enamored off that one poster, you know, I'm not saying I would have given up if he hadn't said anything, but, boy, that made that whole paying for that table and not getting any of that money back work.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You know, and I commend you for making comics that 5-year-olds and individuals like myself can relate to at the same time.
It's very important to do. Very important to do, because the comic base is getting older to begin with. You know, it used to be when you and I were like 13 and 15 years old and stuff, that's who was reading comics, mostly 13, 15, 16 years old.
Well, you know go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say now, the average comic book reader is 25, you know.
Yeah.
And they're charging $3, $4 for a comic. you know, so only those people can afford it.
Yeah, but I also think what is not happening enough, because in what I do, you know, I volunteered teach PE at an elementary school and bring in some comics. And there's not a shortage of kids that won't take them.
Right.
I think that they don't get the access to them. They're not encouraged to read them. I think if they had the access like we had access, because remember when you were that 13-year-old, you can go to the drugstore.
Yeah, you can walk in like 50 or something.
Yeah, that's very important. You bring up a really good point.
You walk in there, and kids stop right there. I know we always stop at the comic book spot. And they don't have that. I mean, now if you want to get a comic book, you have to go to an out-of-the-way comic book store.
Yeah.
Or you go to Borders. And how many kids are hanging out in Borders?
Exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head. A lot of people are predicting the demise of the printed comics. I have an argument with my friends on the Geek Tragedy podcast ongoing about how everybody's going to need an iPad in a year to read comics. And that's simply not the case. All that needs to happen is, one, comics need to stop costing $4. Charge $2 for a comic. Comics shouldn't cost more than twice a candy bar. So charge $2 for a comic and then put them everywhere. Put them back on the newsstand. Put them at the Quick Stop. Put them at the Thrifties or now the Rite Aid, whatever it is.
Yeah, CVS.
Yeah, put them at the Walgreens. Put them at the Spinner Rack.
Exactly.
Yeah, put them on McDonald's. You should.
Yeah.
It should be at Walmart. Right there, you know how you see the Star and the Inquirer right there at Safeway and Walmart?
Exactly.
It should be comic books right below it at kids' eye level. You know? Put them right there. Put them in front of everybody. If you make them cheap and available, you won't need, you know, that's the problem. 10 years ago, the number one selling comic sold 1 million copies. Now the number one selling comic sells 100,000. So it's not that people don't want comics. It's not that they stop buying. It's that these corporations who own the comic companies are charging too much, and they're making them only available in these comic stores, which is cool because everybody needs to support their local comic shop. That's what saved us the last time. But really, you need to get back on the newsstand right now while all these comic movies are being made, and it's in the cultural mindset that comics are cool. You need to be like, they need to make them like a tick. You need to get in there and burrow in their heads and not leave. You know, right now while everybody's thinking about comics, get them everywhere you can. You know, just get them everywhere you can, and then next thing you know, they're ubiquitous again. They're everywhere, and everybody's cool with buying them. And don't just make comics for adults. Make them for kids. Make them for women. There needs to be romance comics, Western comics, not just superheroes.
Right.
Well, there is another resource that people know very little about, which is also supporting the comic book thing. If you go to a public library, you can find comic books there now, too.
True.
And not enough kids go to libraries anymore. We're all stuck at home. That's another problem.
Yeah. That's one thing we guarantee. I want to make a promise from NPC to your listeners. They support us, and we get some graphic novels done, where we get some completed collections. We will donate them to the libraries across the Oakland Public School System and the Hayward Unified School District, because that's where we're from. So any printed collected edition we do of our comics will be in the school libraries across the Bay Area.
Okay. All right. Well, before we go, I want to ask you, tell the people where they can find you.
We're easy to find. Just go to npccomics.com, plural, npccomics.com. You can also look us up on Facebook, facebook.com/npccomics, and go to your local comic shop. Right now, our distribution is dependent on Diamond Comics distributors, so go there. We'll be in previews starting in April. So and come April, you'll be able to look up NPC Comics in your local previews, which enables you to order it from the comic store if they don't already order it. But if you're in the Bay Area, chances are Diver Comics and Mr. Games, Crush Comics in Castro Valley, and also Comic Relief in Berkeley, hopefully they'll be able to pick us up too, and Isotope in San Francisco.
All right. And that's our mission 2011. We need to bring the comic back to the people.
That's how it goes. That's how it's going down.
Yeah.
We will gladly carry that torch.
Oh, you know, I'm carrying it already. I'm talking comics. I'm giving them out everywhere I go. So I appreciate you for doing what you do, and I commend you, and I say keep up the good work, and, of course, I'll be hollering at you a little bit later on.
Always, man. Thanks so much for having us on.
Oh, yeah. And just don't find us online. You can see us in front of Food Maxes everywhere. We're between the DVD guy and the guy in the white jacket.
The guy with the white jacket who's asking for donations walked right past him. Don't go to the DVD guy. Those are bootlegs.
Yeah.
He tried to bootleg the 3D Tron. It didn't work.
No.
You know, we're right there at the counter between them. On the grind, on the hustle.
The target.
Yeah. Got them comics.
All right, y'all take it easy, man.
Thanks for having us, Fred.
All right, thank you for coming on the show, sir.
All right.
Thank you.
All right. Wow. That was a good people over at National Press Comics. Y'all definitely should check them out. They do good work. And on that note, we're going to go on a commercial break here. We are past the point of no return in the extended season-ending Smooth Drama Show. And now we're going to go into my boys. I'm being cheesy here. The Point of No Return, HISD, off the album The Weeknd.
Get another shot of moon water.
Got your man coming right up.
Thank you, sir.
Not a problem.
Keep the change.
A whole C note?
Yeah, I know I gave you a C note. But I'm seeing green.
Okay.
Doesn't matter to me. Feeling good, baby. Feeling good.
Okay, it's nothing major to a player, get it while the getting's good. First round draft pick, picture that we out the hood. Picture that he living good, balling out on hardwood. Since we in the moment, he gon' lift it up like Hollywood. Draft night, cash night, the homie brought a brick of that. Finest of the finest, white, my nigga, where you get that at? Take a whiff of that, and a sniff of that, but take your time with it. Put your tongue on the tip of that. The whole world's an ashtray for Eddie Kane, remember that? But nights like this, I wish to God we could bring him back. But back to the party, moon, water, Bacardi. Lines on the table, he's stretching like calamari. 20 minutes later, experience out of body. Point of no return, cocaine's a hell of a hobby. Word to Bobby.
Know when to fly. Know when to go. You gotta know when to go. Know when to fly. Know when to go. You gotta know.
Cheers for the year, nigga getting it in. Liver meat in the den, leave him pissing again. And then 1 to 10, now 5 is kicking in. He's up to 6, forget the anger managing. He rips, sips the moon water, dipped in that southern blend. But it don't mix like lamps and halogens. Unable, can't shine under the table. Flow poisoning, ambulance is motoring. They can't bring him back, the flat rhyme. Leaning on cats up to 9 and no lives. 10's the best teacher, marked his tomb home. It sliced a nigga like tombstone pizza. Leisure turned into a nightmare feature. Stumbled over words not worth hollering through speaker. Slobber like sleeping as a mouth open creature. Regurg spit twists the pits in his stomach. Oh, he didn't know.
Know when to fly. Know when to go. You gotta know when to go. To fly, know when to go. You gotta know.
Late night action, low and brown to matting. Moon water cool with plans to hit the second. Get a text from this dip filled with passion. Say she want it all night long, how can you pass it? In a flash, 59 South dashing. Gallery of chicks with thick hips and smashing. Mo cushion, good looking for mom's cooking. If sex is a weapon, she about to get booking. Pump like rabbits, guess she got a daily habit. Pound for pound, put it down without the condom wrapping. Sweat trickle like rain and wonder how this happened. Don't even know this chick, but hope she ain't clapping. Months pass at the crib, back to playing Madden. Get a text from this chick who say her belly fatten. She only got 4 months to carry. Telling mom and dad that she about to get married to you. What do you do?
Know when to fly.
know where to go. You gotta know where to go. Know when to fly. Know when to go. You gotta know.
Yeah. On a whole nother level with it. 3 shots, 4 shots, 9 shots, she done did it. Knowing when they can't hold their liquor. Triggered all kind of truth in her mind as she gon' deliver. To her parents in the moonshine. Fair off the go, give her both a piece of her mind. Driving sloppy, crying, not and wanna hurt them. Gone off the alcohol, cause it's a true serum. Some kind of way she still managed to make it there. To her keys at the house while she's screaming out, y'all never kid. And she waking all the neighbors too. Looking around like, what the F y'all gon' do? Here's finally came out, daddy snapped her quick. Struck her in the house, slapped her like this. She like, boss that enough of this bitch shit. To pull a piece out of her that she emptied it. I'm like, damn, she didn't know.
Knowing to fly. Knowing to go. You gotta know when to go. Knowing to fly. Knowing to go. You gotta know.
HISD, The Point of No Return, off their latest album, The Weeknd. Carly, you on there?
I sure am.
What's going on?
What up?
I'm good. Oh, man. Getting ready. This is the end of 2010 and 2011. We're about to go into it and tear it up.
Yeah, that's what's finna go down. We finna change the game. You got to get your cranberry on and space up, people. That's what needs to happen. We need to.
All right. Let me introduce you first for people who don't know. This is my main man, Pierre of Peace of Mind Entertainment. Not Peace of Yours. Peace of Mind. Anyway, man, what's going on with you?
Man, I'm just chilling, man. I'm out here in Houston and got a little rain yesterday and it was real, real nice today. And just got to the house and preparing for tomorrow to bring it in right.
Right. Yeah, we're all looking forward to bringing in 2011 right. You know, plan on making 2011 the year that we never forget.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I want to make every year like that, so.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying 2011, I want to make extra special.
Yeah. I think it's going to go down. It's got all the right numbers involved.
Now speaking of 2011 being extra special. Now I know HISD just released their album. Tell us about how that's going and the shows and what they got happening and where they're gonna be.
The next show is gonna be the 13th out here in Houston. And then they're going to be at the Sundance Film Festival, you know, along with several other A-listers. January 20th through the 30th, they'll be there for about 5 days in several different venues performing, doing some pretty big shows, a couple VIP events, one of the venues, is major, the Yarrow Hotel up in Park City. It's going to be, you know, screens on the hour every 2 hours. And you definitely want to look, you know, get with us on that. So, right now, man, it's just a whole lot of energy. Houston Press just labeled us as, you know, the album, The Weeknd, the top 10 albums of the year. Mad energy, and so a lot of cats blogging. GoWare talked about HISD, GoWare Hip Hop, and the Seventh Borough, actually, Scotty Spitten, got one of the for Sheetrock. His top 10 verses of the year. Scotty Spitten from HISD was one of the MCs, along with Jay-Z, Talib Kweli. He's in some real good company. Kevin Nottingham also.
Well, I was going to say, just butting in here for a minute. I mean, I came out and said this latest album was a classic. I mean, I thought the first album was a classic, and then they came out with this one. I mean, the music, the lyrics, I mean, the flow, I mean, the album flows. It was over the top. It was one of those albums where I could just keep listening to it, but, you know, I subject my listeners to it on the regular, so, and they've probably heard half the HISD album already. If you're real smooth down the listener, you know what I'm talking about. My love for HISD knows no bounds.
I mean, mine too, and I'm close to these projects, and you know, and pushing these guys, and you know, the one thing that I know. That happened within this project is that, you know, it wasn't like a bunch of songs made like a lot of people do, and then they pick some songs that they think is good for the album. They literally made each song the best it can be, and they pushed the gambit with doing that and pushing each other as MCs lyrically and pushed the, you know, the innovation of the music and you know, and I think that's, you know, why, you know, these cats is moving forward and progressing so quickly.
Now I got to, on that pushing forward, I got to ask, last time we talked about the HISD comic. Is that being completed?
It's not being completed. Brady has been on it, and they've been pushing and getting it done big time. We got a great cat that's in the movie industry that came to the table, Mark Cruz, great cat, been in the game for quite some time. He's a producer slash, you know, actor, and we brought him to the table, and this thing has just come together big time. I got to hook you up with Mark.
Okay. Now, yeah. What's got to happen is this. First, I want to say, because I heard through the grapevine that Brady Canfield, who's the artist working on the HISD comic book, as well as the artist and creator Wombat Rue, the comic, has been ill lately. And I want to say to Brady, get better, sir. You
know, yes, for no sure. He got a little sick. Yeah. During that process, but he's doing better. He went in, he got some fluids in his body, and you know, I think that guy's just a hard worker, and he has, like we all do in this business, we have a lot of crazy hours, and I think he just needed to rest a little bit. He got out the hospital, and he's doing well. Talked to his wife; she's unbelievable. A woman. I was up there actually before I got to Houston. We was up there for the weekend, 2 weeks ago. Snowboarding and sledding and going through all that kind of stuff and having a good time and eating and we had a great time. But he is doing better.
Good. Glad to hear that. Now, this is a year end show here. This is my last show of this year. So I of course want to talk about a few things that kind of, you know, I feel need to be talked about here, as far as ending the year correctly, getting out what I got to say. And of course, you my man, so I figure you ride with me. At first, I wanted to talk about this issue and Floyd Mayweather. The ironic thing about this, as you know, Floyd Mayweather got into a little problem, had some issues this year, as well as a few good fights. Now, the one issue that I found that was particularly ironic, to say the least, was, I don't know if you remember Diego Corrales, the late Diego Corrales, the boxer.
The boxer, yeah, okay.
Yeah, well, he fought Floyd Mayweather a few years back before his untimely demise. And I remember Floyd Mayweather came out and said at the time that he was fighting for all the abused women in the world when he was fighting Diego Corrales, because, of course, Diego Corrales had some domestic disputes with his partner at the time. Ain't it funny how when you put that kind of stuff in the air, that shit always circles back around to you. I know nobody was thinking about it, but it was just one of them things I just thought, like, yeah, brother, you said it, and then it came back and got you. So in the scheme of things, don't say it, because 9 times out of 10, it'll come back and get you. I mean, sort of like I remember when Evander Holyfield was talking about Mike Tyson and how he was morally bankrupt. But then the next year, Evander Holyfield has 4 kids in the same year, and he's married.
Sometimes it's just better to be quiet, you know, as my mother say, you know, silence is sometimes the best, and for, you know, women, you know, cats, you know, hitting on women and all that kind of thing, you know, that you got to leave that alone, fellas. You know, it's time to leave, you know, just walk away and leave the situation, you know.
You think that he knows. He's had a lot of years under the spotlight. He should understand the media by now that any little thing that happens, they're there. I mean, you know they're following you regardless.
Yeah, especially when you're flamboyant and you're out there like that. You know, you got to go. Just go home. Leave it alone and go home or go somewhere. Go to your homeboy's house and chill and you know.
Well, I wasn't really trying to focus on him per se, but I just wanted to just bring that out. That's one of those karma deals. You know, you say it, that shit always comes back to you. When you call yourself moralizing and trying to be bigger and better than everybody, that shit happens.
Yeah.
It's out there. Now, I haven't done this in a minute, but I kind of have to. I got my hater of the year here, and it's not even close. You know, I mean, there are some people that's been out there hating, you know, here and there. And there are some people who said this. Some people made some racist comments, whatnot. Some people have done things. I mean, the whole BP thing. You know, BP was in the running for haters of the year. But my hater of the year, and I have to go back to boxing, Edwin Valero.
Who was he?
Who the hell is Edwin Valero? He was a lightweight boxer, 28-0, 28 knockouts. He was a great fighter. Unfortunately, his punk ass was also a woman beater. And guess he got into it with his wife. He stabbed and killed his wife.
Oh, wow.
And then, yeah, then he killed himself. He killed himself in his cell, leaving their children motherless and fatherless. Now, for me, that's all-time hate right there.
I know
on the grand scale, I mean, there's some things that's going on over in what they call Africa, Ivory Coast, Congo, Mali. But as far as an individual goes, I think that is, you know, the whole murdering the mother of my children and then not being man enough to face the consequences. I think that's hate enough right there.
It's a little selfish. That's pretty selfish. That's some selfish shit. You want to do your own self, you know, try to leave something for the, you know, so the kids can have a opportunity. You know, that's kind of my thing. Haters of the year for me, myself, is, you know, people who ain't taking care of the children and loving these kids and trying to help the kids to become better persons. You know, and I kind of was watching something early today, and I found myself 2 hours into this morning on A&E. They got the show called First 48 Hours. You seen that?
No, I've never seen it.
It's a show that, you know, these homicide cops, whatever, go and they have 48 hours essentially to find the criminal. And not that they have 40 hours, but the show is called The First 48 because I guess that's when you find most of your homicide criminals, if you will. And I'm watching this, and it was three things that really stood out in my mind. You know, my point is the whole hate thing. Every show, and I'm watching this show for 2 hours, man, and every show that was on was first some black kids. And second, they was killing other black kids. And the third thing is every one of these criminals went home after they murdered somebody. They didn't skip town. They didn't do, you know, so one, you got these A&E is putting this crap out there like this is our behavior, which it's not. That's not the majority of the black people in the world, which is bull crap, you know. Two, you got these cats out here doing this stuff, and they're not even smart enough to hide. Not that that means or makes any sense. However, you know, my point is, I mean, that's some hate at its best, and it's sneaky hate because you know, people that's watching this, they think that's how all black people act.
I gotta jump in there on that because you gotta look at it from the sense of nowadays the anti-hero is the hero. I mean, you got shows like Dexter. Dexter is a serial killer who supposedly his saving grace is he kills serial killers.
Yeah.
Even though in the course of the show he has killed quote unquote innocent people just to satisfy his bloodlust. But I mean, this is the direction that we go. And people are not looking at how we, like, I'll take, because I'm a comic book guy and been talking comics all night, you'll take a character like Wolverine. Wolverine is a popular character, but Wolverine is a savage, unmitigated killer, and he's popular. You know, and so you're saying, on the whole, when you watch these shows on TV, I mean, because it's like you watch Law and Order, and CIS, they show how these cops, they get the confession, they'll fake some evidence, whatever they have to do. And they show them, and that's how they get the bad guy. And it's dramatic, and it's so-called good. But then, at the same time, I always look at these shows like, yeah, that's how they be setting folks up.
Yeah.
But, see, we reward that kind of mindset by making it popular. And people think the anti-hero is good. And, see, that's one of the things that I personally have railed against my whole time. And, shit, 2011, I'm going to still keep on saying the same shit over and over. Look, when you cut the corners on the so-called justice system, you're cutting corners on your humanity. Even if it's a show where they say, well, in the long run, well, the bad guy is paid. But really, we know in real life, it doesn't go like that. In real life, the not just the bad guys pay, everybody pays. Because the more morally bankrupt you become, the more it filters into the system to where now people worship bad guys as good guys.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, that's what the whole game is about, you know, being the gang. I mean, essentially, you know, I just had this conversation with somebody. Like, yo, they, you know, if they role model, you got good role models, you got bad role models. That's why I don't believe in no role models. I believe in independent thinking according to mankind, you know, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I think you teach people to be able to discern what's good and bad. You teach people how to be innovative and creative,
That's not bad at all. That's the whole point. I mean, it's like I can end this by going to my favorite place, Florida. Florida has an ATM that dispenses out 24-karat gold bars in coins. You know, and I mean, it's the whole, I've been against that kind of stuff forever and a day. I'm not a jewelry guy per se, because I think that shiny rocks should not be more popular and more valuable than people. But we value the shiny rocks over people.
Yeah. I don't wear jewelry either. I mean, but we never have. That wasn't really our game. I mean, I think we did it for a brief period, you know, with the Dookie chains, but it was literally for a brief period.
Right.
It was short.
Right, but that's the whole point. And it's not knocking it. I don't knock nothing until it's to the point where it's more important than everything else.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
and so,
hey, what'd your boy KRS-One say? Love's gonna get you.
Love's gonna get you. Yeah, and that's how we can end the show, talking about we can't let this material love get you. On that note, I want to thank my main man, Pierre, Peace of Mind Entertainment, for coming on the show. I want to thank my man, Jamil Hemp Hill of National Press Comics, for coming on the show. I want to thank everybody who listened to me all year. It's been a banner year, and I plan on coming back next year being even harder. I want to thank everybody, all my guests that have been on. I've had a lot of great guests, and I look forward to expanding it next year and doing it bigger and better. I know all y'all out there, y'all gonna go out and celebrate the new year. I just say, be safe. Be safe. Don't be stupid. And on that note, Smooth Drama Dick Hugger for my man Pierre of Peace of Mind Entertainment. Happy
Thanks New Year. For all the support from Smooth Drama and all the cats out there. You know, Ali Shaheed Muhammad, Questlove, Maceo from De La, you know, all the blogs and everybody that's been supporting HISD. Peace of mind. We appreciate it. 2011,
right.
We're going to get it done.
On that note, we out. Peace.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you got
smooth.
Drama.